Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
A necessity. Welcome. Let's begin.
Greetings. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Real Life. Myself, Jenna Capra. Alongside my brother Roz on this Tuesday evening. How are you tonight, Roz?
Hey, I'm still learning. I'm still learning. How are you?
Still learning as well. Still learning as well. We've had some, we've heard some interesting conversations. And today, we will go over some of those. We're going to get into this mulatto question. We're going to talk about some health. And then we're going to show how propaganda is always at the forefront. Brother Ryers, did you want to start with some of the articles before we get deep off into that?
Everything that I have is relating to the health stuff we're going through, so we could jump right into the discussion.
All right.
If there is anything, anything that you wanted to discuss, bring it up. But I thought we should definitely talk about Upgrade.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You did. I never did look at it. Put it in the chat.
Okay, I'll do that.
My apologies. But yeah, we're going to get right on into it. We'll get into Upgrade afterwards. This mulatto thing, like I was trying to discuss a little bit further last night on Melanated Roots, we have turned into our oppressors. In a nutshell, some of us. And I looked up this word propaganda. So I want to start with, I got this old book. My uncle had it. And we're going to start with the definition of propaganda. Excuse me. My apologies. I had to find it again.
No problem.
Methods, measures, methods and measures for spreading doctrine, principles, printed matter, or speeches for the purpose of promoting a cause, political, religious, or military. Scotty talks about propaganda all the time, and I agree with him as far as spreading propaganda to help liberate our people. But yet and still, we still have some that want to chop the others down. And from the history that I have done, it always go like that. So we have to be ready and prepared. I'm focusing on propaganda today because that's what's being spread. You cannot just take a select set of people and penalize them for no reason. That's exactly what these colonizers, as you say, Rise, exactly what they did. And now somehow we have some type of moral authority to start condemning other folks. And I'm just wondering, like, who's going to enforce these laws that you are creating? So we're going to dig a little deep into that. What you think about that, Rise? Because it was being suggested that we just ban these mulattoes because they are the root cause of all of the all of the suffering we have done or endured, rather, as a people.
So now they're the problem now, is what you're saying. Not the system of white supremacy, but it's interesting to me because it just goes back into colorism, because that's all it is another variation of colorism. And that's essentially when you have the darker skinned black people who have a problem with the lighter skinned black people, and or vice versa, and it just becomes a point of contention. But the truth is that those machinations were set in play by the colonizers. That's not the way things are. Now it is, but before the coming of the Arabs and white people to, I'll just speak about the continent in this particular instance, before they came and carved up the continent and took away the old borders, groups pretty much got along for the most part. It wasn't this wholesale violence we see today. And you had lighter skinned Africans in the southern area, the Khoisan and the San people, and then you had, of course, the darker people in the equatorial area and north of that for the most part. So it's just, to me, when I hear that whole thing about the mulatto, it just, there is a historical precedent to it, so I'm not going to say that it's completely incorrect, because it's not, as far as just when we look at what Dr. Chancellor Williams called the mulatto buffer class, and he was speaking of Arabs, the Arabs of the Middle East, and so-called European Jews. Now, where I find it to be something that is just ridiculous is when it comes to the struggle against the system and trying to instate justice, because you had Huey Newton, you had Minister Malcolm X, you had a lot of people that in somewhere in their lineage had a white ancestor. And some of these people were some of the staunchest, most immovable movers of our story. And you've had, you know, no different with darker skinned blacks, but you've also had dark skinned blacks that were traitorous. So I mean, and when I say traitorous, I mean working closely with the enemy against their own people. They were proxies. And that's something you find with everyone. So to just single them out and say that because they're quote unquote mulatto, if that's the term we're going to use for tonight, that there's something inherently wrong with them, really, it's for me, what I see is it's about nurture versus nature. If a child has two parents of different races, white and black, have a child together, if that child grows up with an understanding of its inherent blackness and the fact that it will be viewed as a black human being, and they have a historical context where they're learning about their history, the history of black people, then that child will function in a way where they're going to be anti the system. If the child is raised by the white relative and told, you know, you're not black, you're mixed race, you know, you have my blood, I'm white, and you have, you know, your other parents' blood, they're black, so you're mixed race, then that person, because those are usually the ones that tend to side with the white relative once they understand the power dynamics of the system of white supremacy. So it's about nurture as far as I'm concerned. And I just think that it's ridiculous, because I've seen many black people who are married to a so-called black woman, and it's a black male, and he mistreats her, he's abusive, he, you know, he may not be the best parent, and all kinds of stuff. So to me, you can find the good and bad in everyone as far as that's concerned. And when it comes to what side they will fall on, I believe that that is something that would be nurtured and cultivated in that child. Even Halle Berry, she's a black female. Her mother was white, but she has always stated in any interview that I've watched her where her mother came up, her mother told her she was a black woman, and never let her forget that. One generation later, now everyone's mixed race. Or they're white, because I remember one day Thomas was talking about how when children are born in the hospital, that they actually choose the race. And what he'd seen was with mixed race children, they would always mark them as white. Regardless of what they look like, they would automatically be classified as white. So, you know, the system's tricky, and it's all about deception. And I just think that to do that is just ridiculous, and I think it's just patently ignorant. That's what I'll say about that at the moment. But we can get deeper into this, because I find it to be a very fascinating subject. And like I said, a contentious one that doesn't really need to be contentious, because to me, I don't care how light you are, how dark you are, I need to vet your character. And that's all that matters to me, is your character. Your character and whether or not you and I are focusing on the same thing is the problem. Those are the only two things that matter. If it's anything outside of that, I don't need to know about it. I don't need to know who you worship. I don't need to know who your partner is. All I need to know is that on what we're doing, we're on the same page as to what the problem is that we're solving, and that you're a person of character, of upstanding character, or good character, as they would say in Yoruba, Iwapele. If you have that, then we can roll. Anything outside of that context, it's a wrap as far as me.
Yeah, I agree. It's, some things, when we look back on history, I'm not sure if people put everything into context and applies it within their day-to-day lives. I believe some things are just stories people be telling, reaccounting. And since they can't do particular things in their day-to-day reality, this is the time to just let stuff go that's in your brain. It goes back to the fitness and wellness as far as us down here fighting these particular issues, dealing with these subjects. Like I stated last night, I have what these people are calling mulattoes, which is, like Scotty stated, is a racial slur. Mm-hmm. So
you heard
some, oh yeah, Brother Chris, I'm gonna get to you in just a second. Yeah,
I have these children.
Oh man, is that too loud?
You're coming through fine to me.
Okay, all right. I have these children. So are we blaming the parents also of these children, or are we just blaming these children? Sometimes a lot of people just be talking. And it's difficult to handle, especially when you know that's all they're doing is talking. But I'll continue a little bit more into that. Brother Chris, how are you tonight?
I'm doing all right. I hope everybody's doing well tonight. I take the side. I mean, if people understand America and just the path that we've been through in this country and how we, the different titles and the different names and the different appearances, the different looks, you know, when someone tries to identify somebody as a mulatto, they're basically going after whatever the parent is. That's a false. That's a false analogy, a false thought process. You're looking at someone, and so you're saying something. Now, if they don't see the parent and they see the person sitting there, then they confused. Oh, I don't really know yet. He got to start talking. Or maybe, you know, when I get to meet the people, see that you know different than the oppressor. You know different than the person that's practicing white supremacy. Every person in the United States of America has some type of DNA ancestry of European descent. And when you talk about a mulatto person, when you say something about a mulatto person, I know my history. You're talking about my grandfather. You're talking about my great-great-grandmother. You're talking about me, because that's in my DNA. You know what I'm saying? So that's something that I embrace because that's in my blood. And it's in every American's blood. But when I think when a person starts to talk about that stuff, he's looking at, he's throwing low blows. Yeah, they throwing blows based on the mother and based on the father or whoever side they is. That's how I feel that is.
Brother Roz, would you?
Yeah, I'm here. I just muted myself briefly.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. I understand what you're saying, Chris. I mean, we have a long history of everybody crossing on everybody, just in the world in general.
That's just how human beings work. You know, people meet and people mate. It just happens. You know, I remember in the early 80s, I remember Dr. Byrd was discussing how in the 60s and 70s that Caribbean people were like outcasts from so-called African Americans, that they didn't get along, they weren't really friendly towards each other and very distrustful. And he said, you know, as we were going into the 80s, of course, reggae music had a big explosion as far as like reggae and what became the beginnings of dance hall. So through all of these parties and stuff, reggae music became popular and African Americans were attracted to that music. So, of course, people are meeting, and they started mating. And he said after that cultural exchange, it was different between the two groups from what he was seeing in you know, Harlem, where he lived, and in the New York area in general. And I found that to be quite true. My family is, you know, my wife is from here. Her parents are from here. I'm from Trinidad and Tobago. There we go. You know what I'm saying? So these things, it's just a natural thing that human beings do when they meet other people. One person might see someone they're attracted to and they're willing to find out more. And after that, you know, we all know the rest. So to me, it's, and like Chris said, it's the history of this hemisphere. It was the most thorough.
But check this out, Ross.
Mm-hmm.
Check this out. I got a good question. I think it's a good question. Well, what is that going to do for the people who they're pointing out now? Because they don't have the military might nor the political power to make no moves against us.
Mm-hmm.
So what you say to that question? Like what is well, it's not a question to you, it's just one I'm posing to the family. You know, okay. Maybe some of these people that feel that way can answer this too. What is your goal for this to happen?
And when you say for this to happen, what is the this you're referring to?
Well, this shunning them out the way.
Oh, you're talking about shunning so called mulatto children?
Mulattoes, yeah. I would like to know what were you going to send them?
Well, to me, it just sounds like and I'm saying this to be funny with the pun intended. It just sounds like some Clayton Bixby nonsense, the black white supremacist. Like it's just like, what are you saying? Like, what are you saying? And how do you blame someone for their parentage? No one asked for their parents to be who they are. You get here, and it's what it is when you get here. So, you know, the same thing that was done to us, and that includes the so-called mulattoes, because you have to remember, if you read books like The American Slave Coast and The Half Has Never Been Told, which we read on the cows, where they discuss plantation-owning white men who had light-skinned black female children would rent them out as whores to other plantations, and they were known as fancy girls, and they would fetch a higher price than the dark-skinned black females that they would also prostitute out to different plantations. And this was their daughters, and they had no problem prostituting them and making great money off of their daughters. And then, of course, if she turned up pregnant by a white man, then the child would be even lighter, because now it's further miscegenation, as they would say is the term. So and it's another generation removed. So you know, it's interesting to me that you can look at them as a group as far as their history, because a lot of times they ended up being in the house because they were more pleasing to the eye of the master, because they were closer in skin color to them. And they got raped just like the dark-skinned ones got raped. And they were in close quarters, so it was a lot easier. So to me, to act like they have a separate history from the rest of us is just it's the most ridiculous kind of stuff. But to me, the age that we're in now is the age of misinformation. And the age of, they call it the age of information, but I actually believe this is one of the greatest phrases I heard from Robert X. Black people are data rich and information poor. You can go on the internet and you can find something that will validate anything you want to say, the most ridiculous thing, and you'll find something on the internet that'll say that it's true. That's just the age that we're in. And because most people don't know how to research, they don't know how to vet things, they don't understand the process of checking out methodology when dealing with subjects and understanding different disciplines and using a multidisciplinary approach, which was first postulated by Sheik Anta-Diop and Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark and John Jackson when they started ASCAT and the First World Alliance in New York City when I was a child. You know, these people don't have that kind of insight, so they'll just say anything, and you will find something to back it up because that's the age we're in. So there's so much misinformation. Then you got a bunch of people on YouTube putting out a whole nother set of misinformation. And it's all tying into this whole, we have these cults and movements. And there's a bunch of YouTube cults. There's certain folks that just got these millions and millions of views and millions of followers. And that's just the world that we're in now. So we have to really be vigilant. And even when it comes to something like this, this is just another distraction. Let's cut out the mulattoes. They're a problem now. Well, to me, you know, my family suffered a lot of abuse from people that looked just like me. You know what I mean? So
that's normally how it happens.
If I wanted to, I could be just as mad at black people as white people are. White people don't even have a reason to be mad at black people. But my thing is, I understand the mental illness, and I understand that that's the way that we function. So our people behave idiosyncratically all the time, and for them it's normal. And that's something that I chalk up to the way the system is. We have all kind of DNA damage from over 500 years worth of generations of our people that have been terrorized and genocided and all kinds of mistreatment that has never been dealt with. Then you have the daily reality that we live of current traumatic stress disorder. So people act crazy. And I have to compensate for other people's lunacy so that I don't do something in defense of myself that, in turn, it makes things worse for both the other victim and myself. So,
man, you are hitting it on the nail.
My thing is that anyone who even thinks in that way is just damaged good psychologically. And they're the last people you want to be anywhere near, quote-unquote, in charge if... if and when the system collapses and we attempt to do something new, because they're going to create the same system that white folks had, and it's just going to be a hierarchy of the black people that they want to put in whatever position they want to put them in, whether it's by color strata or whether it's by nepotism, if it's family, all of that type of stuff. Because a lot of...
Yo, Scotty got a question.
Absolutely, go ahead.
Go ahead and finish your thought, Ross.
No problem. I was just going to say, a lot of us, and we're all infected with this. I remember Dr. Bay used to say that too all the time. He was like, we're all fighting the white chip. We're all fighting that part of us, that little white man that just literally is pulling strings in our brains and telling us how to think and what to do. And even when Scotty brought up earlier, we were talking about having to say the Star Spangled Banner. And I thought about what Scotty said in reference to down south. They didn't have to do that. And I was wondering if that was an act of defiance due to the Confederacy being down south. And they're like, we're not saying y'all anthem up there, y'all Yankee crap, because it was a religion for us. We had to say it every morning. We would say, you know, the national anthem. It was just, they would, you know, hit the buck, this little tone would play, and then everyone would stand up and put their hands on their chest. And I would do that stuff too, play around, and I didn't really care about it, but I mean, it was just a regular ritual. And I was like, this is the kind of indoctrination that breeds the person that Scotty was speaking to, a Vietnam vet, that was just completely out of pocket. But yeah, with that, I'll close my mouth and go ahead, Scotty. You can get in your question or comment.
Yeah, for my question, quick correction. I wasn't able to clarify on Tando. I was actually going to a majority black school. It might have been one or two white students, but that was about it. This was in the 70s, and this was in Detroit. It wasn't down south where we sang, but, you know, my mom and them, they sang that too, okay? And that was down south because they had Reed High. That coincidentally, that was the name of Reed High, where my mom went to high school. Ooh. Before they closed one of the schools. So it was a national thing, man. It was just, guess it just fell into the hands of whoever the administrator was, the principal, you know what I'm saying? So it wasn't just in the South. But my question is getting to the root of things. Now, I agree with Mr. Fuller when he talks about it's a system. And so we are systematically programmed with an ideology. So that's ultimately what we're talking about, an ideology. What was the word? I don't want to butcher the word. Say it again, Ross. Miscronation? What was that?
Miscegenation.
Miscegenation?
Yes.
Okay. Now, speaking of Tando, I mentioned this book, The American Roots. Let me pull it up and read y'all an excerpt. So we want to talk about what's the root of this black ideology, and where did they pick it up from? Where we are really stressing on that and saying that, oh, if we just eliminated that, then that would eliminate racism, white supremacy. Okay, which mm-hmm. I don't think it would. But everything I in agreement with mostly everything that was said tonight on the subject. But again, I was mentioning, why do we propaganda? Jerry mentioned propaganda. We've been propagandized to think the Nazis was the most evilest white people on the face of the planet, and ain't no other white people been as evil, when it is a matter of fact that they studied under America. They studied the laws here on anti-miscegenation, you said?
Yes, laws. So
let me read from the book, Hitler's American Model, The United States in the Making of Nazi Race Law, because that's what we're talking about, self-imposed law. And under this law, we're going to mistreat some people. Because like Mr. Fuller said, you know, racism is about white supremacy, excuse me. Well, racism too. It is about mistreating someone on a skin color. And I'll probably cue that up later. But anyway, Hitler's American Model, The United States in the Making of Nazi Race Law by James Q. Whitman. I'm not sure, but I think he is a white person. So who better to tell you about white supremacy? So this is an excerpt that Otis posted on Facebook. about a review. It says Nazism triumphed in Germany during the high era of Jim Crow laws in the United States. Did the American regime of racial oppression in any way inspire the Nazis? The unsettling answer is yes. In Hitler's American Model, James Whitman presents a detailed investigation of the American impact on the notorious Nuremberg laws. Look those up, you know, take notes and look these things up yourself. The Nuremberg laws were the centerpiece of anti-Jewish legislation of the Nazi regime. Now, I right there, because we got to always be skeptical, that's erasing the Nazis' other victims. You don't think there was no mulatto, so-called mulattoes, which is a white man's word, and why did he invent that word? To identify non-white people. If you're non-white in a system of white supremacy, what does that mean? You're a victim. You're going to be victimized, or what's the point? Or they would have just put call you white. All right. Yep. So he goes on to say, you know, so, you know, they, again, this is why you got to research. Germany had Afro victims. People were targeted because of their politics. People were targeted because they had physical disabilities or mental disabilities. And they killed 11 million people total. So he goes on to write, though, contrary to those who have insisted that there was no meaningful connection between American and German racial repression, Whitman demonstrates that the Nazis took a real, sustained, significant, and revealing interest in American race policies. As Whitman shows, the Nuremberg laws were crafted in an atmosphere of considerable attention to the precedents American race laws had to offer. German praise for American practices already found in Hitler's Mein Kampf was continuous throughout the early 1930s. And on a side note, that's when it was introduced into black nationalism. And I'm not going to call no names because some people have idolatry status. And you mention their names, they've done some good stuff, and you can follow their model, like in a certain area, like propaganda or understand the media or whatever their business, whatever their expertise was. But when their ideology starts mirroring the oppressors, where's the root cause of that? So I trace it back being introduced into black nationalism in 1930s. Okay, not all black nationalists, so I'm not painting with no broad brushes, but I can definitely tell you, just look up black leaders meeting with the Ku Klux Klan or black leaders meeting with the American Nazis, and you'll find the information for yourself. He goes on to write, so 1930s, key period, after Hitler praised them in his book, which I think was a bestseller. And the most radical Nazi lawyers were eager advocates of the use of American models. But while Jim Crow segregation was one aspect of American law that appealed to Nazi radicals, it was not the most consequential one. Rather, both American citizenship and anti-miscegenation laws proved directly relevant to the two principal Nuremberg laws, the citizenship law in the blood law. Whitman looks at the ultimate ugly irony that when Nazis rejected American practices, it was sometimes not because they found them too enlightened, but too harsh. Indelibly linking American race laws to the shaping of Nazi policies in Germany, Hitler's American model upends understandings of America's influence on racist practices in the wider world. We at ground zero for white. That when I say behind enemy lines, I mean behind enemy lines. All right. So that was the this guy is a professor of comparative and foreign law at Yale Law School. All right. So yeah, there you go. We got to find the root. Where's this coming from? I mean, and it's just clues when we use terms of the oppressor. Okay, That is direct evidence that we emulating it. And when we talk about mind control, which, you know, Dave, I think was talking about on Tando today. There you go.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so funny you said that, because a lot of our greatest issues is really like some, and I don't even like to use metaphors, but it's really some monkey see, monkey do. If there's a great book called All God's Children by Fox Butterfield that deals with the origin of violence in the black community, black on black violence, especially for frivolous things where we'll attempt to kill each other for like the simplest, seemingly innocuous things. And they trace it back to us watching white men in the South dueling with each other and their culture of dueling for respect. And that the slaves, specifically, they went to South Carolina. That was where they really, that was where the heaviest history of this was. And that it was so prevalent. If you know about Ben Tillman, Ben Tillman almost beat another senator within inches of his life with his own cane. And that was basically like a duel, but he didn't actually introduce it as a duel. He snuck him. But ultimately, black people were witnessing this stuff and started doing it to each other. And there were even cases, and they talk about it in All God's Children, there were cases where black men killed white men as well for disrespecting them. And it was something that people thought was unheard of because of the racial situation. This was all during the time we were being lynched wholesale. But yet there were stories in South Carolina of black men murdering white men for disrespecting them. And then come up to when I was coming up in the 80s and 90s, it was you stepped on my sneakers and, you know, you get shot in the face. And, you know, similar things still happen to this day. But, yeah, the origins of stuff, a lot of our worst traits, the origins come from us following them, and then we forget where this stuff comes from. Like, after a while, it just becomes such a way of life. We have no idea of the origin. So I appreciate you laying that
down,
Scotty.
I got a question. Oh, I had a question specifically for Ross.
Yeah,
and then
Chris got a question, too.
Chris wanted to follow up. But Ross, now you study African culture and you know more about African culture way more than me. Are any of these type of laws did you find in the historical record or even modern laws that this was originated in African culture or any aboriginal culture around the world of non-white people?
No, there is no group of people that are non-white that I know of that exhibited those traits. Usually anything that was dealing with another group of people were people that they might have been in a disagreement with. So you had times when Egypt was fighting Nubia and vice versa. So at that time, they would treat them as the enemy. There's even images at Abu Simbel of captured Nubians that are bound, and they're sitting at the foot of Ramses' giant statues out there, the ones that's built out of the mountainside. And that was because during that time he conquered all the way down into Nubian Egypt, and that was his way of showing them his dominance. That's where you get I believe it's David in the Bible talking about making his enemies his footstool. That is exactly what Ramses did at Abu Simbel, and you can see it. And the carving is as tall as I am. It's at least 6 feet, and it's just amazing. So yeah, I don't know of any culture on the African continent that ever did that. What's happening today, you're seeing, is a byproduct of us absorbing white supremacy. Like now, you'll go to the Congo and you'll find that like the little people, the Twa, the Batwa, and all those different little groups are mistreated, you know, by the other black groups, the taller Africans in those areas. And these are things we learn from white people. They taught us how to see each other and how to abuse each other. So all over the continent, you got in South Africa, they're trying to kill Nigerians that come there for work, and Ethiopians are trying to kill Ethiopians down there that's going there to work. And it's the xenophobia. But we didn't have that kind of xenophobia. Even if you watch that movie Shaka Zulu that came out in the 80s, there's a section where they show them going to war between two tribes. There was a tribe where Shaka was like a friend of one of the kings. And all they had these war clothes on, and they were actually stomping and doing a war dance. And the British guy said, They call this a war because no one was trying to kill each other. No one was throwing spears, no nothing. And it was Shaka that introduced the idea of killing and created a warrior culture using different, you know, methods. And, of course, the short spear was his main weapon to attack. But he introduced that to South Africa. Before that, they actually had nonviolent warfare. And it's written of in Chancellor Williams' book, The Destruction of Black Civilization.
Hey, Ross, that warfare, we got about 15 minutes. But I'm aware of that movie you talking about. But if I'm not mistaken, and even from the historical record, though, they didn't absorb those tribes that swore allegiance to Shaka, and they married each other, and then that was a way of making peace too. That's a Aboriginal culture in exchange of wives and what have you. But we got about 15 minutes, man, and Chris
let's get Chris. My bad. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate you, brother. Go ahead.
Oh, you good. I gotta write my stuff down when you start talking, or I'm gonna lose. I was Scotty kind of hit on what I was getting ready to say, and I was speaking on just the term, the use of the word mulatto was used to separate them from non-white people. And basically, when they were calling these people mulatto, they knew who their significant other, they knew who their mother or father was and why they were called mulatto. It came from them. So when a black person today uses the word mulatto, he is really identifying it based on the parents of that person. They're not doing it like they were doing it back then. So in a way, I mean, it's really a form of treason. I mean, I know that sounds kind of, but it's really like, yo, you know, we all in the same boat. And then when you just call out certain people because of who they with, they still us. We still all together. And you're going to lose about 85 to 90% of your fight if you even took that route. Like, if there was some exclude mulatto movement, there is no way that would get set off the ground. Because we are too mixed in with too much. And we just got to, it's all going to come down to character. That's how this is going to happen. And that was just my point on it.
Thank you for adding. Yo, and that's, you know, that article that Scotty had read, it went right to my point of this question. Like, what are you trying to do? Once again, the word pops up with this propaganda. But go ahead, have something else that you want to say.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, when black people choose to do anything, we usually out at being self-hating. Yes. We are the best at looking in the mirror and seeing an enemy. We are the best at name-calling each other. We are the best at being crafty, being sneaky, being fifth columnist, being traitorous, being proxies. We just, when we set our minds, our focus to doing things that are negative to each other, we outclass even our oppressor at times. And because we'll even use the oppressor to further abuse another black person. like we get that deep with it. Like I said, if you ever see two black people and a white person comes into the mix, they're not going to try to get rid of the white person and finish their argument in privacy. One of them is going to try to get the white person on their side so they have the power faction on their side to subjugate the other party. And that's what would happen. When myself have seen arguments with Jews, even in business, even whatnot in the fashion industry, and once they find out the owner of the business that whose production manager they want to steal, position down immediately. If they East Indian or Arab, anybody else, oh, forget it. It's a free for all. But once they hear that person got a Jewish last name, they cease and desist immediately. That's what you call a cult. Go ahead.
You were just breaking up for a minute.
Oh, my bad. I was just saying that's what you call a cult. And we don't have a cult. Everything about us has been infected with the enemy. and with their system and their viewpoint. We view the world through the eyes of white people, even though we don't have white skin. That is the way we're trained. And it starts with saying that Star Spangled Banner from first grade through the 12th grade in some instances. And then from there, just whatever other forms of indoctrination you get throughout your life where you're not able to exorcise those things out of your consciousness and your psyche. And I just, that's the biggest fight, is being mindful and trying to self-assess at all times. Am I doing things the right way? Am I doing things in a way in which I'm functioning like my oppressor? I actually ask myself those things quite a bit, because I try to be mindful. When I'm dealing with other black people, I try to be mindful about how I deal with them, mindful about how I talk to them. Understanding. Sometimes that's all they want, is to just say something to somebody, just get it off their chest. And if it takes them 10 minutes and I just met them, they get the 10 minutes. It's what it is. Not a lot of black people think or function that way. That's just the way I do, but you know.
That's, you know what though? That's the propaganda that we would like to share. You know what I'm saying? That's our propaganda.
Absolutely.
It's to make people think about those things. I want to get back to me personally though. Like it's crazy, because as I teach my children who they are, I have to keep in mind, like you said, I always be mindful of the people like this that they have to deal with. No matter how much more they know, you know, ideologies are religions, another form of religion. So they have to be able to counter these people also. Scotty in the chat earlier, Max Potts. Awesome. Absolutely. Awesome warrior. And he's doing stuff. You know what I'm saying? He actually going and making things happen.
Personally.
And that's what you would be calling him. You know, it's just I think it's more of a disrespect thing sometimes. You understand? You feel what I'm saying?
Yep. It kind of reminds me of the scene in Juice where Tupac is talking to Q. And he said, you ain't shit and I ain't shit. And as soon as I decide that you ain't shit, pow. And he makes the gun symbol with his finger. And that's what it is. It's really the deepest form of self-hatred you can ever experience on steroids. And the person is able to rationalize their mental illness. It's almost like what's happening now with the laws that are rationalizing homosexuality as a normal behavior rather than what it actually is, which is a mental illness that is being culturally normalized. And it's just an interesting thing when you find that a person can analyze and dissect another human being like that. And it really, what Chris said is so poignant, because when you see someone on site, you don't always know what their background is. But if a person is a so-called mixed race child, usually black people tend to point that out. They just tend to assume a certain way, and then that's it, unless the person actually tells them something different, and then they say, oh, okay, well, they're from this country or that country, but I thought they were. And like Chris said, I think it's very important that who they're describing are the parents of the child, not the child. So it's a deep, multi-layered insult, and it's something that will have the child questioning themselves. You know, it kind of reminds me of a cousin that I have that I actually had to not deal with. He's married to a white woman, has children by a white woman, but he hates white people. And I mean, he'll talk all kinds of craziness, and you know, he does have all kinds of guns. He's a gun aficionado, and he talks crazy. And I'm like, dude, you can't say this type of stuff in front of your children, because you asking them to question themselves when they go in the kitchen and mommy's there and she's white. Yeah, and I had another friend that was Dominican, but loved Puerto Rican women and hated Puerto Rican people. and he would have nothing but the most vehemently nasty things to say about Puerto Rican people. And I would tell him, you're psychologically damaging your half Puerto Rican children. And it didn't take long for him to understand what I was saying, and he no longer does that. I said, you guys have the same history. I don't understand. What the heck is wrong with y'all? Y'all are basically the same people on two separate islands, and y'all hate each other like you did something to each other. But a lot of those differences, even in the islands, were started by the oppressor. They used to have competitions between islands who could bail the most sugar, who could bail the most cotton or whatever else. And then the slaves started to wear those competitions that the colonists put on them as if it was them. And they started hating the other people, the other group that they were in competition with, no different than you see people who represent different teams, and they hate each other because of the team that they choose to, you know, to roll with in basketball or football or whatever. So it's all psychology. And we're talking about master psychologists dealing with victims who are seeking any sort of power they can get because they know that we are the most powerless. And that's what it is.
I agree.
It's trying to escape the reality of everyday life, being a prisoner of war and your life being in danger and you being potentially terrorized every day by a person who's white or even a person who looks like you but functions like one of them. And a lot of times, to get away from what they can't deal with in their personal life or their real life, they decide to pick another person to victimize. It's the bully factor. It's what America's doing right now around the world. You drop the dollar, we gonna bomb you. It's the same thing. It's just on a smaller scale. We follow them. You know, like Tupac used to say, the biggest gangs, you know, was Mike Tyson in a short documentary talked about the fact that the red corner and the blue corner started from the Democrats and the Republicans. And he gives a whole history of boxing and its relationship to politics. And at times, there were certain political events that were dictated by boxing matches based on that red and that blue. So it's some deep stuff, man. The psychology is real deep. But those people are the people that we got to really be vigilant for. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Nah, I was just saying, it takes you on a... A long twisted road, man. You spoke about character earlier.
Yes.
The character of the person. All the time. And sometimes the people with the worst characters are the ones that's perpetrating all of this. So we just have to be mindful. And like you said, always be thinking and ready for that particular type of behavior. On the cows, they talk about it all the time when other brothers or sisters be banging on your work, like you said, to impress the colonizer.
Yep. Never be surprised. That's one thing that I've learned in this life, and even my son and wife has brought that up on many occasions. Like, things will happen around me where other people will probably lose their crap and start bugging, and I stay really calm, and I'll just process everything in slow motion. And she'll be like, how do you remain calm? Like, there's situations that have happened where even she would be on alarm. Even an incident involving a gun one day, early in the morning, this guy was, like, fed up with the arrows moving into the neighborhood, taking over the gas station. So we waiting for gas. And the dude had, I guess he had some sort of altercation with the guy previously, and we didn't know. So we're there, like, 6 in the morning or whatever. And he rolls up, and he wants his vengeance that moment while the dude's pumping the gas, and he flashes a gun. Like, he got like a little 9 in his waist, and he's like, you want this? And then he looked in the car, and my wife started talking to him. He was like, sir, she was like, sir, you know, we just trying to get to work this morning. Just leave this guy alone. Like, she literally, and we talking to him, and then I'm talking to him too. I said, look, you know, you don't have to go. He's like, nah, they taking over this neighborhood. They don't give us jobs. Da, da, da. He was just going off. And I could tell, like, he might have had trouble looking for work. So all of that was pent up, and he was ready to just explode. And my wife was literally terrified, but I was really calm, and I was talking to the brother, diffused it, and then he walked away. And the guy, I think he took the rest of the day off. But, he was ready to tactically shoot the dude, and my wife on the driver's side. And I was like, yo, this is crazy. And she was just nervous, handshaking. I was very calm. But that's just how I process things. And it just works for me. I don't think it does anything. You can't think. You gotta think.
I everybody. We're finna get ready to go to break at the top of the hour. Scotty, did you have a question you wanted to add in? Because I see this over here in the chat.
Oh, I gotta go back.
Well, I'll mention it. I don't want to take away from the topic because we're talking about, like Max Parthas put it this way. Y'all mentioned his name earlier. He has a white father and a black mother. At the time, anti-miscegenation laws were in effect when Max was conceived. So as he has stated publicly before, it was illegal for him to be born. And when they started talking about abortion, people like Nixon mentioned mulattoes that they wanted to exterminate. Okay. But my question is, though, what is the root of this ideology to where we penalize people and even go as far as to kill them because of their sexual behavior? No matter how disgusting as me, a man, thinks, which I don't try to picture it, but in the past, if I pictured it, I'm just turned off by it. I don't see the attraction, whatever. But because I wouldn't engage, I'm gonna kill somebody because they engage in that type of behavior, or I'm gonna back societal penalties for these people for doing something I wouldn't do. Based on what? And I was trying to say, is this rooted in Nazi? Did the Nazis actually were original with their laws against and targeting and killing of homosexuals? Because they, again, it was communists, it was Afro-Germans, it was, which were probably mulattoes. Might as well just say mulatto. If they was Afro-German, they was mulattoes. The infirm, just everybody that wasn't Aryan, that wasn't a pure Nordic ethnic racial group, but did that originate in America? I can't remember them ever putting any homosexuals to death.
I don't remember that being the case. I will say I have a documentary on the black victims of the Holocaust. And the guy, one of the guys whose story they tell, he talks about being, I think it's either 14 or 15, and that the Nazis sent some officials to his house to pick him up at like 4:35 in the morning. They took him to a hospital, and without anesthesia, they made him a eunuch. They cut his testicles off that morning. And he said that was the normal practice because of the anti-miscegenation laws that, they round you up anywhere between 14 and 16 when they know that, most boys would be able to ejaculate, because they said that a lot, and they made it clear in the documentary, a lot of those German women loved black men. So, like, they would go bonkers. And it was something I heard even later from a friend of mine who was in the military and was stationed out there. He said the same thing. And it just made me think about that. So that, you're absolutely right. People don't think about those victims at all.
But to wrap it up so we can go to get our break, I don't want to take away from the topic of mulatto, and you just took it back there. But again, I have my spiritual beliefs about homosexuality, but my spiritual teacher teaches me that the Creator will judge them. But there are some of us, and the Nazis did this, was they put those people to death. Now, I know people will also, and the Nazis were heavily Catholic. You got different branches of Christianity, but these American Christians was over here raping little black boys and men, engaging in homosexuality. But I don't recall studying American history any of them being brought up on charges of homosexuals or being stoned to death, as the Bible says should happen to people. You know what I'm saying? So
not at all. Yeah.
But the Nazis was putting you to death for that. So it's not to me whether or not my religious beliefs, spiritual beliefs, or whatever, or whatever religion I'm following, the ideology I'm following, says should be done to them. It's my characters, and do I have that right? Do I have that divine right? Because when you're talking about imposing the death penalty, you're playing God. So do I have a divine right to put another person to death for engaging in a sexual activity that isn't going to, you know what I'm saying, impact me any kind of way. Except for, of course, it's going to be propaganda out there, but it's on me as a parent. It's on me as an individual to make my choice and not be, but to me, that's not an excuse to put somebody to death. So what's the root of that?
Well, eugenics, that was eugenics in motion because they felt homosexuals had bad genes and they didn't want anyone else, you know, passing on those particular genes towards homosexuality because you're not procreating, you're not adding to the race. So that was a major thing with the homosexuality with them. With black people, which, you know, we've always been called the most homophobic people and all of that type of stuff, which a lot of people don't understand the roots of that. And it really comes from the...
I don't think a lot of us are. I think
not a lot of us, but I know like the people always use Jamaica as an example of that. But Jamaica was a place that was had what was known as seasoning plantations. So you had what was known as recalcitrant slaves. They couldn't break. They were rebellious and did everything opposite to what the colonizer told them to do. So they would send them to Jamaica, and the worst of them would go to Suriname. But anyway, in Jamaica, what they would do is they would have 10 white men, four of them holding his arms and legs, hold him spread eagle, and then would have a bunch of them rape him, one after the other, in front of hundreds and hundreds of slaves. So they would round them up like a town hall kind of a thing, but it's all slaves with you know, the masters in the center, and this is what they would do. So in Jamaica specifically, their dislike of homosexuals was the context in which it was introduced to them. They had never seen that sort of stuff because in their indigenous culture, it was not ever a part of their natural behavior. And to see it done in such a brutal fashion, and you're gang raping, you know, the strongest black males, created that vehement disdain for it. And the context that the other thing that a lot of homosexuals don't understand too is that the context of the history of homosexuality, when you go back to its origins in Greece, Rome, and England, and places like that, was always attached to pedophilia. And then you have the white masters that practice pedophilia on us and our children, practice homosexuality. How many black women were raped by white women? We don't know. How many black men were raped by white men? We don't know. But if you read The Delectable Negro, you will find out some things that will blow your mind. But it was happening. It was stuff that was not addressed. We always talk about the black woman getting raped. No one talks about the black male getting raped. But it happened a lot. And especially if you looked the part, you were handsome, you were, you know, a handsome strapping buck, as they would call it, and the dude found you appealing, that's what it was. We're going to go to our commercial break. We'll be back after this quick commercial break at Real Life, the radio show. One love.
No, it really isn't. Because, see, people are thinking in terms of, well, they want to brag about being black, which means that they are implying that there's something incorrect about being white, even though these are the creations of the Creator. See, and then so everybody gets into this black pride thing or white pride thing, and people immediately start taking sides. It's not about taking sides based on black and white. It's about taking sides based on justice and non-justice. Well, that's what you're really aiming for. Being black doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in justice. And being white doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in justice, except you mean in, you believe in non-justice. And that doesn't make any difference what shade you are or how tall you are or who your cousin was or anything like that, or what so-called nationality you have. Like a lot of people say that they take pride in being an Englishman, or take pride in being a Frenchman, or take pride in being Afrocentric. Well, you're not supposed to be proud of any of those things if you don't believe in justice, because these words mean nothing. No nationality means anything. And waving a flag if you don't believe in not mistreating people. You've got to believe in not mistreating people, and you've got to believe in helping people that need help the most. Otherwise, you don't even have any business breathing. because it's evil. Well, white supremacy is a system. And what does white supremacy really mean? It just doesn't mean somebody being in charge. No one should care about who's in charge of anything. If the person is not mistreating people, white supremacy is about mistreating people based on what? Based on the color in the skin of those people who are being mistreated. That's all it is. It's a form of mistreatment. There are all kinds of mistreatment in the world, but that's the greatest form of mistreatment. That's why it's supreme, because it's the greatest form of mistreatment. If you want to look for mistreatment of the people anywhere on the planet, most people are being mistreated based on color. That's what it is. You know, if it's just two people on Earth, I mean, one person might mistreat another person just because the person is jealous or envious or something. Yeah. There's all kinds of ways to mistreat people for all kinds of reasons. But this business about racism is about mistreating people based on color.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Peace and welcome back to Real Life, the radio show with myself, Ross, and my co-host and brother, Jenna Capra. Peace, good brother, what's up?
Man, that was dope. I'm glad.
I love those clips that we saw. You're breaking up a little bit. Go ahead, speak. Let me see if I can hear you now.
Matter of fact, let me just...
I can't hear you, Jenna. Did you mute yourself?
How about that? Is that better?
That's a lot better, yes. I love those clips from Neely Fuller.
Okay, I had... Yes, that was a great insert, Scotty.
Yeah,
perfect for tonight.
Love what he said.
It's that occult-like following. Even when you have the information and you just single it to a particular way, well, I can't say it no better than Mr. Fuller. You ain't practicing justice. But I know we wanted to get into the to some of these health issues. You got your screen pulled up?
Yeah, I'm going to try and get to it now. I'm here. Let me just go through. Because there's a few things here that are very, very, very interesting. Let me just... Yeah, there we go.
Why are you trying to find that? If you have a question or comment, by all means, give us a call. The number is 704-802-5056. Press **. Put yourself to unmute yourself and just watch your background.
Yeah, so I'm in there now. I'm just getting to the one that I wanted to start off with first.
Let's
okay.
go, brother.
So, here we have... my screen went to act the fool. Okay, here we go. All right, so here we go. This one is from Science Alert, and it says, marijuana compound removes toxic Alzheimer's protein from the brain. An active compound in marijuana called tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, has been found to promote the removal of toxic clumps of amyloid beta protein in the brain, which are thought to kickstart the progression of Alzheimer's disease. The finding supports the result of previous studies that found evidence of the protective effects of cannabinoids, including THC, on patients with neurodegenerative diseases. So it's basically saying the plaque that builds up in the brain as the brain cells are dying off, which is what creates the different behavioral issues, memory loss, things like that, especially long-term memory loss, and the slow cycle of neurodegenerative decay, that marijuana, THC specifically, is found to remove those the buildup of those toxic amyloid beta proteins, which is what facilitates the entire illness. And it's something that I think is very, very much worth knowing about, just in case anyone is dealing with a relative with that. There's a great article posted on my profile on VTR Community by Jack Herrera. And Jack Herrera was the author of a book called The Emperor Wears No Clothes. And it's one of the go-to comprehensive texts on the history of marijuana and its laws in this country and all the different things it was used for and the legalities of the plant. And his mother actually had Alzheimer's, and he gave her joints to smoke and saw a complete reversal in her behavior and an improvement in her memory. It's almost like everything that was happening stopped and went backwards. And in the story, in the article, he talks about rolling her about 60 joints. She was supposed to smoke two a day. And he had them placed inside of a medicine container, two medicine containers with 30 each. And, you know, she knew what her regimen was because his mother was, you know, a lot older. So she was of the age of the people who would say marijuana is a drug and don't touch it, it's dangerous, all of that stuff. She was in the Reefer Madness era. So she really thought of it as the worst thing ever. But he was able to convince her to use it as she was getting worse with her disease. She was willing to try anything. So anyway, he found that it actually worked, and he left her 60 joints, and he gave her the regimen two a day, and then he would come back and then, you know, give, you know, she would re-up basically and come back and give her more. So he said that his father had found the containers with the joints rolled up shortly after he left, and he was of the same group, so he threw them away. He's like, what you doing with these drugs? And he threw them away. And he said within, I believe it was 2 months, she was dead. It was like the Alzheimer's came back with a vengeance and just doubled up on whatever it was doing that the marijuana had reversed. So, and he was just horrified at how quickly she degenerated and how it was just the simple misinformation about weed being bad that facilitated the whole thing. Because his dad wouldn't have thrown it away if he understood what it was for. So anyway, I just wanted to put that out there because it's something that can help. And it's something that I've worked with in the past with my mother-in-law, and we've seen some interesting results with her that were quite positive. But you have to really test your doses and see what works, and that's what I would say. But yeah, I just wanted to put that out there because it's something I think is important. So this one here is from mindbodygreen.com. And it is what stem cells really are and how to boost them naturally. The results of a new study showing that fasting for 24 hours boosted the stem cell activity in mice recently blasted the headlines of every major news outlet. So this is basically talking about how you can naturally boost your own stem cell count by doing certain things. And stem cells are the cells that can actually become any type of other cell in the body. So if you have any damage in the body, if it's a broken bone, stem cells can become bone. If you have a blood disorder, stem cells can become blood cells. They can turn into any cell in the body. So that's the importance of having them. And this particular article tells you about the different things you can eat and the types of behaviors necessary to facilitate that. So I'm just going to read a little bit here. So it says, what in the world? Oh. Get out of here. Okay. So it says, what are stem cells anyway? Stem cells are a type of cell that has the potential to develop into different cell types in the body. Because of this, these types of cells can serve as a repair system and theoretically divide without limit to replenish other cells for as long as you are alive. When a stem cell divides, each quote-unquote daughter cell has the potential to either remain a stem cell or become another type of cell with a more specialized function, such as a heart muscle cell, red blood cell, or brain cell. And to simply boost stem cells while we're young, then use them to keep our heart, hips, brain, and other parts of our body healthy as we age. How can we boost stem cells? There are a few well-known methods for accessing your stem cells that can be used for serious medical conditions. Keep in mind that these would not be used for just any health and wellness program, but under medical supervision and for a specific medical issue. They are bone marrow stores, which can be harvested by drilling into bone for a biopsy, fat cells which can be harvested by liposuction, blood extraction by apheresis, a machine in blood banks that looks like a dialysis unit. In the recent study published on fasting and stem cells, the research team fasted mice for 24 hours and harvested stem cells from their intestines. They grew the stem cells in a culture and measured their activity. They found that the regenerative capacity of the stem cells doubled compared to mice that did not fast. The science fits well with the large body of evidence that nutrition or absence thereof during fasting has profound effects on the behavior of cells and the maintenance of health. One of the researchers, Omer Yilmaz, indicated that, quote, fasting had many effects on the intestine, which included boosting regeneration as well as potential uses in any type of ailment that impinges on the intestine, such as infections or cancer, unquote. So I'll stop there. So you can get that article. It's from mindbodygreen.com, and it's entitled What Stem Cells Really Are and How to Boost Them Naturally. And it's something that I think you should definitely look into because of exactly what I said and what the article said in regards to what they can do and what they're used for. This next one is from, did you have anything you wanted to say, Jenna?
Oh man, I was digging it. I'm just enjoying, like Scotty said earlier.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
One thing I wanted to ask you though, I wanted to get into this depression. Now, yeah. I don't know which one you on. I want to get into the essential oils for depression.
I'm there now. I'm actually there at the thoughtco.com, and that article. This one is a good one, and I think it will help. So I want to get into this too. Aromatherapy and color therapy work in harmony. So, and this has to do with essential oil, something that I'm very deep into. So it says the colors of flowers reflect the color of essential oils. As plants derive energy from the sun's component rays, which contain all the colors of a rainbow, they offer a special method of absorbing color vibrations into our system. Unlike synthetic substances, which have no vital force contained in them, essential oils are filled with living, pulsating vibrations. This is why aromatherapy, like color therapy, forms a part of vibrational medicine. Vibrational medicine is a form of medicine that uses the powerful vibrations of the electromagnetic spectrum. As I've been researching aromatherapy and color therapy for years, I've learned how they both work harmoniously together and blend to create the desired effect. To create the perfect blend of aromatherapy with color vibration, you can blend a complementary color pair, such as yellow and violet or pink and green. You can also use color as a guide to using essential oils by mixing those with similar or complementary colors. Orange skin tonic. Put 16 drops of essential oil and 16 drops of orange essential oil and 4 drops of neroli into half a cup or 4 fluid ounces or 100 milliliters of orange flower water. Use it as a cleanser as required. Do not use if you are pregnant and do not go out into the sun for at least 72 hours. That's because some of those citric ones can cause photosensitivity because they're really, really strong. So you have to be very careful with essential oils, but they can work wonders for you. This one is Yellow Violet Healing Balm for acne and spots. Mix 2 drops of lemon essential oil and 1 drop of lavender essential oil with 6 drops of evening primrose oil. Spread onto the affected area morning and evening. Again, do not use if you're pregnant and do not go out into the sun for at least 72 hours. The reason why you shouldn't use it when you're pregnant is because these particular substances are very, very powerful, and when you have a child developing, the mother might be more susceptible or even allergic to certain things. Also, the child could possibly be allergic, and these things can also potentially tamper with their DNA, so of the developing fetus. So that's why you don't want to use them if you're pregnant, or if there's something that you wish to use, get your doctor's recommendation and they'll tell you which capacity in which you can use it. And you never put any essential oil on your bare skin. Always dilute it with a carrier oil. Carrier oils can be anything from coconut oil to jojoba oil to olive oil, castor oil. There's tons and tons and tons of them, but basically it dilutes it to a point where it will be very powerful, but not to the point where it can cause any sort of negative skin reaction. So, because sometimes you can get what's known as an essential oil burn. That's something I got from cinnamon bark. and it was a small drop that fell on my skin. I didn't think at the time, I wasn't thinking about it as a big deal, and it turned out to be a bigger deal than I thought, because it got bigger and bigger, and then I had to get it taken care of, because I've always had nice skin. So I'm actually working it out now using some natural stuff, and so far it's going good, but we'll see. But yeah, don't play with essential oils on the plant when you're on your skin without diluting it. It can really mess you up. So the next one is called the Violet Tonic for Blemished Skin. Put 12 drops of lavender into
Well, hold on. Hold on, Bruce, before you get into that next article.
Oh, I was
you were just talking about.
Go ahead.
You was talking about the time you had burnt yourself.
Yes.
Now it's you want to give the people a few little tidbits as far as like mosquitoes and things of that nature, because I know you put me on to a bunch of stuff on how I use my essential oil. So if you wouldn't mind, you share that with the family also.
Yeah, for mosquitoes, you can actually use catnip. Is good to get rid of bugs like mosquitoes and whatnot. Citronella, lavender also gets rid of mosquitoes and certain other bugs too.
Peppermint,
yes, peppermint is good for ants as well, and good for other vermin. You can use them. You actually spray peppermint around in your garden if you have flowers that you don't want certain bugs to tamper with, or aphids and stuff. There's certain oils you can use in combination to put in a spray bottle and then just spray that area. But peppermint is really good for getting rid of ants and other creepy crawly insects, spiders, things like that. They don't like peppermint at all. Actually, roaches, if someone has roaches, one thing you can use is colloidal silver. It gets rid of roaches because it kills the diseases that they carry. Roaches carry over 56 illnesses that can harm human beings because they're used to living in filthy environments. So they have a genetic relationship with those different illnesses they carry that they're vectors of. And colloidal silver kills them all. So if you kill the diseases that they have the symbiotic relationship with, you're killing the roach. So wherever you see them, you want to clean it thoroughly and spray the area with colloidal silver. You'll never see roaches go in that area again. Just wanted to put that out
there. My man.
That's some...
Yeah.
that's serious stuff. But yeah.
I ain't want you to go too far.
Yeah, you can look into that too.
I ain't want you to go too far. Just give a couple tidbits out there before we get to the next article. But
sure.
Man, wealth of knowledge.
Another good thing too is like if you have mice, you can get something called diametiseous earth. And this earth that you can put in the container and you soak it with water and you put a certain amount of specific essential oils in it, and it'll scent the area with these scents that mice don't like, which also includes peppermint, spearmint. I use a combination of peppermint, spearmint, wintergreen, and eucalyptus, citradora, eucalyptus citradora. So that's basically eucalyptus, but the lemon scented variation of it. And then also I put in one drop of cayenne pepper essential oil. You put it in a spray bottle, and you spray it wherever you see mice. You're not going to ever see them there again. It's like tear gas. They hate it. They hate peppermint. It's like it's almost like pepper spray to them. And then when you add the cayenne pepper, of course, it's going to have that same effect on them. So you'll never see them again in those areas. You can also put it on cotton balls and leave it in the area where you see them frequently. Also, if you see holes, you want to plug them up with steel wool and also saturate the area with those essential oils in combination. They will go away. That's another really good one I wanted to toss out there as well. Before we move to the next one,
I know you've been wanting it for a couple of weeks. Go ahead, man.
No problem. So this one is from there's an essential oil for that, or an EO is how they have it written. There's an EO for that.com. Oregano oil and the benefits that you need to know. So oregano oil is probably one of the most important oils you'll probably use, because it can help you with anything from a toothache to the flu. It's one of the world's best disinfectants, and also it can kill infections in the teeth and cause you relief if you have a toothache. So this one, I'm just going to read some of what's here. It's entitled...
Hey, cool. We got a break in 3 minutes, Ross.
No problem. I'll keep it short. Oregano oil and the benefits you need to know. There's almost no better essential oil that fights off infection as well as conventional bionics, antibiotics than oregano essential oil. In fact, this powerful oil has become a staple in many homes to help fight off colds, stave off early flu symptoms, and even prevent flu viruses from replicating. There are so many oregano oil benefits that it's almost hard to believe that a single oil could be so amazing. So they go into how the oil is made, and then there we go. So it says phenols are among the most important class of essential oil compounds, which oregano is made of, because they cleanse receptor sites or quote unquote free radicals and protect us from viruses and bacteria. They are the ultimate initiations of the healing process due to their purgative effects. Monoterpenes are responsible for enhancing the therapeutic benefits of other components within an essential oil and coordinates their healing abilities, even turning potentially harmful constituents into quote-unquote healing helpers. Oregano oil has these chemical constituents, which is what makes it such an amazing oil to use for health and well-being, especially during the flu season. We're going to go to the commercial, and then I'll finish with this.
Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
Welcome back to Real Life, the radio show.
Yes, sir.
Enjoying the participation. Roz, me and Roz decided we was going to do this health thing, at least a small segment in each show from now on, because this brother has helped me and the people just that I know with the information on essential oils and other things of this nature. So this is something that we're going to be adding continuously. With that being said, if you have a question or comment, the phone number is 704-802-5056. Press ** to put yourself in the queue, and we'll get right on with you. If you have any questions about what we're talking about now, the different ways Brother Ross was talking about the essential oils, or any of the other previous conversations we had on the use of the word mulatto.
For sure.
Hit us up.
Please do so. We'd love to add to the conversation. So,
I have something.
Oh, go ahead, Brother Chris. What's up?
The oils, some of those essential oils that you can get like out of Kroger or out of Whole Foods,
uh-huh.
So they got some that it says don't put on your skin. They do tell you on some of those oils.
Yeah.
Some people, you know, some people get the oils from, you know, other people, you know, that make them at home or, mm-hmm. you know, that does it naturally, and they don't know that. They also have, I know that clove oil, though, that clove oil get that poison out that tooth or that type yeah. of inflammation. That yeah, stuff wipes that stuff right out.
You are absolutely correct. It functions yeah. just like cloves itself, because if you chew on yeah. cloves and stuff it in the tooth, it'll do the same thing, but
right.
usually it's a lot more uncomfortable. The oil is, like you said, straight to the point. But go ahead. I'm sorry for interjecting.
I've told, like, a lot of people, because years ago, somebody said, man, just go get some clove oil. And I was like, what? So, I went and got some clove oil, put that thing on my tooth. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been just telling people that. But one thing you put me on was that collodial silver, though.
Yeah, that'll get rid of a toothache yeah, in no time.
I heard too. You say collodial silver before I even called in, before I even start calling in, like before we even had conversations. So I'm
wow.
like, let me go get this collodial. I'm like the collodial king now. I'm collodialed out.
You got the machine too, because you can make it. I think that's the most
yeah.
economic thing.
Got,
just get the machine and you
I
can bang it out.
Jenna about that.
Yeah.
I got this thing. I got it to make the collodial too.
Yep.
I ordered that little thing off of Amazon.
Yes.
And I haven't started
that's
making
dope.
It yet.
Yeah.
It's like a backup on the backup. You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah. Just get yourself some distilled water, and from there, once you get the generator and everything, man, it works all the time. I used it for an earache last year, and it took the earache all of a little less than 2 full days to be gone. I just put like
yeah, see,
2 to 3 drops in my ear one day, 2 to 3 drops in my ear the next day, and that was it. It was done. Normally, you got to get antibiotics and go through all that craziness.
Yeah.
Not me.
Our people got to stop being stubborn, because I've been trying to tell my son, and he's sitting up here scratching and itching. And so I had collodial soap. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, he used to, you know, dealing with his mom, you know, and antibiotics. I don't use no antibiotics, man. Put this on your skin, son, and come talk to me in the morning. Came in the morning, it was gone. Wow,
absolutely.
Dad. I said, see, you got to stop thinking you need to go to the clinic all the time. We have it in the house, in the apartment. It's here.
And let
so,
him
you know
that all that antibiotic stuff has an ingredient known as triclosan. It's also something you find in toothpaste. If you don't use natural toothpaste, you're going to find triclosan in that toothpaste. It is a known cancer-causing agent, and it's also a known effeminizer of men.
I got non-fluoride in the bathroom
yep.
right now.
Yeah, you got to really watch that. And the same thing goes for both acetaminophen and ibuprofen. Both of those are known to effeminize young boys, especially if they take it for an extended period of time. You're only
wow.
supposed to take it for a short period of time, but if you take it for too long, you might start to see gynecomastia, which is the which is a fat in the buttocks. You'll start to see those things happen if they take it for a prolonged period of time.
Take it for a long time. And one thing I want to say to the people, get that organic cranberry. Not the...
Yeah.
It's the cranberry so strong that they say you got to mix it with water.
Yeah. You can get
but
it from like the natural health food store.
I
yeah.
drink mine straight.
Me too.
You know what I'm saying? it's like $10. But, I mean, yo, I just drink it straight.
I do the same. Matter of fact, when my father-in-law, as he got older before he passed away, he used to get UTIs, urinary tract infections, like on a regular basis. And we were asking the doctor if there was anything they could give us. They were like, nope, we just have to give him another antibiotic. And we were like, are you kidding me? So we started giving him colloidal silver. He was still getting them, just not as frequently. And then we started giving him the concentrated cranberry like juice, like you were saying, and that's what stopped it. For the rest of his life, he did not have another UTI because of that cranberry. It's really concentrated. I think it's like 10X or something. I've gotten it at CVS before, and I know they sell it at like natural places like Great Bear and other you know, big health food stores, but it works really well. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, too. I didn't even think about that, but that is another one. And we saw that work with my father-in-law because he was getting them. And usually with men, especially men with prostate problems, and he was a prostate cancer survivor, they get UTIs like crazy once you have that sort of a background, medically speaking. So that was the situation with him, that we mitigated with the concentrated cranberry juice. So yeah, thanks for that, Chris. Just work that out, man. For sure. Peace and love, brother. So just to get
brother
into
Scotty
this,
got a, okay. Brother Scotty got a question too.
Sure, bring him up. Bring him up, Scotty. What's good?
Yeah, I'm not going to attempt to find it because my browser act like it want to get stuck. But I just saw a health news report about colon cancer and black men, and saying that when you're doing proper health maintenance, even when black men get colon cancer, that they actually respond better to treatment than white men. I'm 52 years old, so I recently had my colon checked at the at the VA, and I knew I was going to be good to go, and I was good to go. Total blood work up, everything good to go. Couldn't be in better health. But that maintenance, you know what I'm saying? And as far as colon cancer and also cranberry juice too, that will also help clean your system of any chemicals they testing for if you drink that concentrated and drink a lot of water and go to the bathroom. So that tells you it's a cleanser. It cleans your body of any kind of toxins. I've heard people say that's what they use to beat drug tests.
Yep, and it has been used before. I think the tests are way more sophisticated now, but you are absolutely correct. I know that from personal connections with people, so you are not lying. And there was something that you just said that I wanted to speak on too. Oh man, what was it? Something you just said.
Studies showing black men respond
colon
better.
Cancer. Yes, black men and colon cancer. A major component of that a lot of us don't understand is that we're not getting enough vitamin D, and doctors don't tell black people that. That is one of the major reasons why we get colon cancer in the epidemic levels that we do. It's because we don't get enough vitamin D. That's why it's so important to get out in the sun. We're not in a tropical environment. We're in a temperate environment. So our skin only sees the sun usually during the summer, maybe parts of fall, and maybe parts of the late spring. But for the rest of the year, we're covered in clothes. So as a result, we're not getting vitamin D from contact with the sun. So we have to take supplements for it, because that is one of the major vitamins that help facilitate protecting you from colon cancer. If you're not getting enough vitamin D3, that's the one. That's the one that even I have turtles. I have to have a UV light in their turtle tank so that they're able to process that vitamin D3. Otherwise, their shells get warped and they can die from malnutrition. And those are reptiles. So black people, because we're not in a tropical environment where we're, don't have to wear a bunch of clothes, we have to supplement that vitamin D, and you will see that's another protectant. And if you have it, it can help you fight it. But vitamin D3 is essential for a lot of things: proper nervous system function, bone and teeth repair, and especially fighting diseases as far as like colds, flus. It's the immune system booster. And then also it helps with a lot of different cancers, and specifically colon cancer. I've even heard a doctor say that is the one thing that black people aren't being told about that disease, is that one of the major causes of it is a vitamin D deficiency. And because of our dark skin, it is a disadvantage in this particular environment. It's at an advantage for white people because they're white. So very little parts of their bodies have to be exposed for them to still get vitamin D, because there's no filter for the sunlight. So they do need the sun. It's just that they can't take it in its raw, most intense capacity. That's us. But when it comes to being in a temperate environment or a cold environment, they are better suited for that environment because of their pale skin. That's just the biological fact of that. and that's one of the reasons they have lower levels of colon cancer than we do, because they're getting that vitamin D. And you always see the white folks, even Neely Fuller talked about that, white folks running, jogging and all of that stuff, so they're always out. And they'll be out in the winter with shorts and in a sleeveless T-shirt, you know what I mean? So they still get in the sun, So yeah, it's something to think about, but for sure you want to definitely get into that. So it says here that all of oregano's uses and benefits: it can treat allergies, asthma, athlete's foot, bronchitis, candida, which is a yeast infection, croup, digestive upset associated with flora overgrown like SIBO, earaches, fungal infections, gingivitis, indigestion, inflammation, pneumonia, pulmonary tuberculosis, rheumatism, sinus infections, sore muscles, sore throat, toothaches, whooping cough, and yeast infections. How to use oregano essential oil safely. So it says oregano essential oil is one of the stronger or hot oils. It is important to know how to use it safely to avoid skin and mucous membrane irritation, or what I got, essential oil burn. So since it's so potent, it is really important to dilute it properly if you're using it on the skin. Maximum dilution for oregano should never exceed 1%, which means you can use a maximum of 6 drops of oil of oregano per 1 ounce of a carrier oil. You can apply this mixture topically to fungal infections on the skin and nails two times daily to help fight athlete's foot, toenail fungus, and other fungal infections. For yeast infections and toothaches, you would need to dilute oregano oil much further than the maximum of 1%. I would try 1 drop of oil of oregano in 1 ounce of coconut oil and test it carefully on the skin before use. It should still be very effective. A 1% dilution can be used as an effective muscle rub after strenuous activity and even for sore joints due to arthritic pain and inflammation. Apply it to the abdomen to help relax the digestive tract and soothe cramping, bloating, and digestive discomfort. If mixed in water, it can be used as a sore throat spray. Try just 1 drop of oregano essential oil in 1 ounce of water and coat the back of the throat to help fight infection. For my favorite sore throat spray recipe, check out my post, and they give the post. So, I'll just stop there with the oregano, but you can definitely get into that. I think it's probably one of the most important oils you can have in your arsenal, especially going into any potential emergency situation or some sort of mass disaster. That is the oil you want to have. The next one we're going to get into, this one is also, there's an EO for that. It's how to use essential oil safely for babies and children. Now, with babies and children, if you use the oil, you have to dilute it and you put it on their feet. You don't put it on any other body part but the soles of their feet. Even if you're getting sick or you think you're getting a cold, you get 4 thieves essential oil, you dilute it to the 1% like I was just speaking about, and you rub it on the soles of your feet and put some socks on. And it's going to facilitate fighting whatever cold or flu that you might have. Another way to protect yourself from a cold or flu too is to, I would say at least twice a month, you want to put hydrogen peroxide in both of your ears, let it sit for about 15 minutes and drain it out from one side, then do the other, because that kills germs in the ear canal. Colds and flus start in the ears, then they travel down to the nose and throat, and of course, you get the symptoms. So in order to prevent that, I would say at least use it twice a month, do it that way twice a month, and you will probably never get sick. And that was scientifically documented, that cold and flu start in the ears first before it travels down the eustachian tube into the throat and, of course, into the lungs as well. So that is one thing you can do. If you use colloidal silver, you only want to use it if you have an earache. You can also use it as well to prevent infection. If you did the same thing, I would only put like 1 drop or 2 drops because colloidal silver does kill the good bacteria in your ear canal as well. That's why you don't want to use it as often. Hydrogen peroxide doesn't damage the good bacteria, but it does kill infections and pathogens. So that's why I wanted to say that. So this one is how to use essential oils safely for babies and children. So let me see.
But
so, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I just hope this stuff out because it helps you. Literally, all of these things are things that me and my family, and it's wonderful. So I hope y'all paying attention and writing these all.
And you can actually go into the real life group. And I actually upped the thread from the date of 5/29. That's where all of these articles are. I didn't want to just repost them in a new thread when I already had them all where I could access them easily. So that's where you can find them. And this one, this article I'm reading from specifically deals with how to use these oils safely on children and babies. and it tells you basically it's a pretty comprehensive information on how to utilize it, how not to utilize it, as far as them not ingesting the oils, things like that, because they're not supposed to ingest them at all. They're still developing, so you only use them on the soles of the feet, and then they give you the different dilutions and the different oils you can use with your child. And there's a pretty extensive list of ones. A lot of them I actually have here myself. But what you'll find is that they're very potent, and plants just do what the Creator made them to do. As a result, all you have to do is know the right essential oil, just like you would know the right plant for a particular illness or ailment, and then you can facilitate utilizing that particular oil, just like you would use the plant. Remember, the essential oil is the essence of the plant, so it's the most potent part of the plant. It's the life force of the plant, and as a result, it's extremely powerful. That's why they speak about diluting it before using it topically, or if you're putting the oil in the mouth, like it's
Roz, I can't hear you. Waiting on Roz to get back.
Can you hear me? Hello?
There's a great book.
Yeah.
Garden.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I think I knocked my headset out. Unplugged my headset by accident. I found that. Yeah, what were you saying,
Chris?
Just now?
Said man down. Yeah, Chris said man down. But Eden's Garden.
Yes.
I think all of us should own this. It gives us the certain steps of how to treat ourselves with these essential oils. Go ahead, Ross.
Oh, Eden's Garden. That's right. Yes, you're right. No, I thought you were talking about the other book, Back to Eden by Jethro Kloss, which is a book on herbals, different herbal remedies you can utilize at home. It's like a super, super thick book, and they make new editions every so often, but it's one of the best books I think anyone should have if they're into really getting into natural healing. I think it's great. And there's another one called Basic Herbs for Health and Healing by Brother Hakim Rasan, if I remember correctly. And it has herbs, both African and Caribbean and Native American herbs, that and how to use them for different illnesses and different ailments, including ailments that bother children as well. So that's a great book, Basic Herbs for Health and Healing. And then African Holistic Health by Dr. Laila Africa. That's another great one too, that I think folks should get their hands on.
We got three more, we have 10 more minutes left in the show.
Okay.
For tonight. Been wonderful. Before we get out of here, though, I would like for you to go over some of these essential oils that can be taken for depression, because I know a lot of us suffer from these particular issues, too, and a lot of us don't know nothing about that. So can you go into that a little bit before we get out of here tonight?
Yes, that I'm going to actually go off the dome, because I think there was an article I had for it, but I don't think it's in this particular thread. But oils you can use that can help you with depression would be rosemary is very good for that. Lavender, chamomile, that is a more relaxing oil, I would say, for mental clarity and alertness, as well as to shift the emotions from negative to a positive vibration, would be citrus oils like mandarin oil, bergamot, lemon oil, lime oil, tangerine oil. Also, peppermint is also very good for the emotions, lifting the spirits and the emotions as well. Vanilla is good for that. I'm trying to think. I'm literally going off the top of my head right now. But those are the ones I can think of immediately that you can utilize if you have any sort of issues with depression or just feeling down. It would be great to utilize it in a diffuser. A cold water diffuser basically is almost like a humidifier, but it is designed to make nanoparticles of essential oils and disperse them in the air, so that you can inhale the oil, because you get the efficacy that way via inhaling it. It has an even deeper effect on not just your emotions, but your entire body. There's oils you can actually inhale that boost your immune system. Four Thieves is one of the best for that. Oil of oregano, of course, is another one. But like I said, you get the diffuser, you can use it that way, and you just inhale the vapor that comes out of the oil diffuser, and that way you can get the best effects from it. Four Thieves can also help you as far as like if you're in the beginning stages of a lung infection, and you have a diffuser, you diffuse the oil and inhale it almost like a nebulizer. You get right up on it and inhale the vapor, and it can actually kill the infection. There was actually on Amazon a few different responses as far as people's testimonials regarding the effectiveness of Four Thieves oil, one that I use. And this guy told a story of going overseas and that he was coming down with bronchitis, and that he had his diffuser that he traveled with him and Four Thieves, and that he had intensely inhaled those vapors for like, I think he said it was like 2 days, and he never got bronchitis, and the flu actually cured itself. So these things do work, and the oils are powerful medicinal additions to our arsenal as far as the world that we live in and the world that we might be living in not too long from now. So let's utilize these things. Like Jenna said, we'll be talking about these things more often and try to make it more regular, because I do know that there's quite a few people that are dealing with different things, and sometimes, most times, they're looking for things that are natural, especially those who listen to this network, and we might end up talking about something that can help someone or potentially save someone's life. And I've seen the effectiveness of natural medicine when you know the different herbs to use or different plants to use or essential oils to use, like Jenna said, you know, and it's something that can really change a person's life. And so we're going to just continue doing that because it can help someone. And if it does, then that's wonderful. So that's what we're doing it for.
You are correct. Yo, man, wealth of knowledge, man. Human encyclopedia. Watch it. Yo, we going to get ready to get on up out of here tonight. Jay, all of the contributions to the show. I believe everybody it's good when you have open dialogue. So
sure.
With that being said, we out of here. Scotty, did you have something you wanted to say before we get out of here tonight?
No.
Okay.
Go so ahead, Ross. Hit the prayer for us.
We'll say the prayer and be out of here. So I just saw a man down. I started cracking up. So, yeah, we're going to say the prayer and get out of here. Peace to everyone. Thanks for spending your Tuesday night with us. Please stay safe and productive the rest of this week. And hopefully, you know, you won't have any contact with race soldiers or any sort of negativity in your life. We wish the best for all of you. Love you all. And thank you all. And we'll say the prayer now and make moves. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times and all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice ASAP. Stop human trafficking and slavery in the form of the prison industrial complex. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. Thanks once again for spending your Tuesday with us. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week. Peace and love.
Yes, peace and love. Westwell,
Kisasa music.
What up, son?
What's good, Dad?
Billie Holiday said a long time ago, no two people on earth are alike, and it's got to be the same way in music. Otherwise, it isn't music. Always remember, never follow the crowd. I have something important to tell you. And I'm gonna let you know
what it is.
I believe in revolution, the retribution with two tons.